Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the Andrew Nimmick Recruiting Podcast. Joining me by phone this week is Jordan Johnson. He joins us seemingly every week in the fall, although we missed last week. I got sick. You were on vacation for a little while there. You had a business trip. So we missed last week, and I want to be able to jump right into it. But thank you for joining me, man.
Yeah, buddy.
I want to do something a little different. Again, we missed 2 weeks, so because of that, I don't really want to preview or recap last week's action or the week before. I want to go over the top 10 and your top 10 and go over the strengths, weaknesses of each team, and then also their ceiling and their floor. And what I mean by ceiling and floor is, and this is a really easy example, Tualatin's number one in the state right now. Their ceiling is the state championship. Their floor, we're saying, what's the worst that can happen, barring massive injuries? Yes, there's always an injury or two. We're not projecting John Miller to get hurt or Casey Filkins for Lake Oswego to get hurt, anything like that. So a reasonable floor, a reasonable ceiling, the strengths and weaknesses of each team, everybody in the top 10, and then also preview this week's action quickly. How's that sound, JJ?
Yeah, man.
Okay. Some of the teams outside the top 10, I just want to go over them. You have Mountainside at 11, Lake Ridge 12, Alloa 13, Liberty 14, Clackamas and Newburgh tied at 15. Also Jefferson, depending on this week's result, might have a chance to be a one-loss team going into the playoffs. All of those teams, we're not saying they are not good teams by any stretch of the imagination, but realistically, the ceiling for all of those teams, or the floor, excuse me, for all of those teams is a first-round exit. It doesn't mean that's what we project. That means worst case scenario. And best case scenario is probably not the state semifinals. And that's why we're leaving them out. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, JJ, but knowing how we feel about the depth this year, I'm guessing you and I feel similarly about that group of honorable mention programs.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I would think top six, give or take, which is way more than most years, actually have a shot at a state title, and I think that was our consensus last week as well, or 2 weeks ago. So separate from that, I think that's a realistic assessment.
It's always hard to remember because we actually talk probably three or four times a week about different things going on. So it's hard to remember what we've said on podcasts versus just our conversations. But yeah, I wrote an article and listed it at six. I think that six is still strong, teams that can win it. But there are some pretty high ceilings in the lower half of the top 10. Let's start with number 10, North Medford. Strengths and weaknesses of that program.
It's a very good senior group. A kid named Jet Carpenter, for example, got an Eastern Washington offer, 6'3", 205, cousins of Wyatt Houston, who was the tight end at Utah State a few years back, had a shot in the league. Anyways, North Medford has the best team they've had in a number of years. The transfer, Devin Brad, who came from Eagle Point, is, I think, the state's second leading rusher behind Demir Collins. He's killing it. Double-digit TDs already. So a nice senior group that barely lost to Sheldon last week, 28-27 in Eugene. Had a lot of penalties. So we'll see what they can do, winning a couple playoff games. I think that would be a big deal. I think that's, your realistic ceiling. Floor-wise, they're not going to win that conference title, which is unfortunate. Well, I shouldn't say that just yet, but that 28-27 loss to Sheldon last week really hurts, being that there's really no other teams that are going to compete for that title in their conference. So I think that's they could be one and done. I doubt it, but I see them as a two-win playoff team most likely.
Weakness?
Just haven't been there in a long time. I mean, they do not have that, oh, we're North Medford 1993 mentality. I know it's a long time ago for people, but they used to be a power and just dominant. And I don't think they have that necessarily, that swag, pardon the pun. And so it's just one of those ones where I don't know going into the playoffs if there's going to be that confidence.
For me, the weakness for them is depth of elite talent. I know Jet Carpenter's really talented, but you look at some of these programs in the top half, and they've got 4, 5, 6 big-time playmakers. I don't know if North Medford has that level. They certainly don't have that ceiling, and we'll jump into that. Ceiling and floor, for me, North Medford ceiling is probably the quarterfinals before they would face somebody that was really tough that I just don't see them being a semifinal team. And the floor, I think they're pretty buttoned up. I don't see them realistically losing in the first round. They shouldn't lose in the first round because if they're a top 10 team and they should do pretty well in league play, they should have a pretty good record. They shouldn't face a juggernaut early in the playoffs. I think the floor is a first round exit or a second round exit, again, ceiling being the quarterfinals. What say you?
Yeah, they should definitely win their first round game. We don't know what the seedings are going to be, but for example, you referenced Jeff, and they beat Jeff by 32 up here in Portland a few weeks ago. So they're a good football team. I would have a hard time seeing them not advance, into that second round, if not the quarterfinals. So worst case scenario, losing in the second round.
Number 9, Sheldon. Strength of the team is probably quarterback play. I think Griffin Line is sort of an underrated player. I know they're really thin at the skill positions, and that's certainly the weakness of this team. They're decent up front, and they've got a good quarterback, and they also have been there before. Excuse me, I'm still getting over a cold. And as we've mentioned with North Medford, you know, we said we had one of their weaknesses is they haven't been there in a while. This is a Sheldon team that expects to win games. And sometimes getting in the playoffs and having been there before, they perform better maybe than they should or maybe than the roster talent speaks to. They're also very well coached, and that's very inconsistent in the state of Oregon. I think there are a number of teams who are in the top 10 pretty consistently who aren't very well coached. They just have a lot of talent in their area. This is a pretty well-coached team. I think the strength, again, Griffin Line and then coaching, and also a couple of their offensive and defensive linemen are pretty good football players.
Yeah, one of the top lines in the state. They return, I think, 3 or 4 first and second team all-league starters. Travis Johnson, 6'4", 265. He had 11 tackles and a pick the previous week. And he's a D1 guy at some level. But they return all these other kids, not necessarily D1 projected kids, on that line. I can't say enough good things about Griffin Line. Even more so defensively, he's just a phenomenal overall athlete. And then with head coach Josh Line, his father, does a great job. I mean, they had a rough start to the season. They have injuries, started 0-3, lost to Graham Kapowsin 21-14 up in Washington, and just got blasted by West Lynn. So it was a tough start to the season, very unusual for that program. I foresee them being a 2-win playoff team at most. Sheldon's not going to lose in the first round. They just won't. And I think they're right in the same room as North Medford, very similar this year. North, based on what I heard, I wasn't there, should have won that game. But Sheldon at home in Eugene, it's just that the reason I picked Sheldon last week is because I just learned not to pick against them at home, especially. So I foresee them being a two-win playoff team, maybe, and more than likely. I mean, definitely not losing in the first round. I got him at number 9.
Yeah, I like Sheldon. Having seen them play, sometimes things can spiral out of control for them in a hurry. This is the worst Sheldon team there's been in a long time. It's certainly a down year. Again, they lost to a Eugene area team for the first time since 2000 when they lost to Thurston. It was the first time they'd lost to Thurston since 1998. So they've taken a step back. At number 8, a Metro League team, which is nice to see, that's not Jesuit in the top 10. We don't see that very often. It's Beaverton. The strength of this team is clearly the passing game. Carson Budke, a senior quarterback, one of the better quarterbacks in the entire state of Oregon. He's also throwing to a pair of elite receivers in Trent Walker, who I had as a preseason first-team all-state selection, making the leap from being an all-league guy. He's making me look smart early. He's had a couple of 200-yard receiving games, a few touchdowns. He had a pick 6 for 96 yards. Big-time playmaker. Senior Cody Davidson, another potential all-state wide receiver. Looks like, you know, it's hard to have two first-team all-state receivers on the same team. Somebody gets you know, the bulk of the catches. Right now, it seems like Trent Walker's a little bit ahead of Cody in that regard. They're probably equally talented, although Trent's younger, so he's a little bit better prospect. And for me, the weakness of this team is just the defense and potentially the running game. I don't see them being particularly balanced. They like to sling it, and their defense isn't great. They're going to have to win games in shootouts, and when they play good teams, their line play is probably not going to hold up against the very best teams in the state, and their defense is going to give up points. So they're going to win games when they win them against good teams in shootouts, and I don't know if they have the defense to beat some of the top teams in the, you know, in the top four or five teams in the state. That's how I see Beaverton's strengths and weaknesses. What say you?
I like Beaverton a lot. I like their athletes. A lot of good things to say. Carson Budke is a gamer, you know, related to Taylor Barton, one of the best ever to come out of the state. And he's got that it factor in a lot of different ways. Trent Walker, as you said, love that dude, man. One of the best dual threat juniors in Oregon, hands down. Just he'll play Division I football at some level. And I couldn't agree more with regards to the who are we going to see this week. They barely beat a not very good Summit team, 35-26 earlier in the year. They beat West Salem 28-21. On the road last week. They got beat up by Clackamas, who is not good. I mean, in comparison to these last couple of years, obviously. So it's one of those ones. I actually got Mountainside going to Beaverton and beating Beaverton this week in a close one. So, you know, that's by no means definitive, but I like Beaverton. I have them ranked number 8. I don't see them advancing or winning more than 2 playoff games this year. That loss of Jimmy Joyce, I know we've talked about it multiple times as their offensive coordinator, no disrespect to anybody else, I just think he was that valuable, and he's going to be that good of a head coach when all is said and done. Now it can be Jimmy Joyce with a beast. So I see Beaverton, if we're talking ceiling, winning 2 playoff games at best, and potentially losing in the first round. If you're playing close games, I mean, it was the first game of the season against Summit, so you can't really use that. But they will most likely win a playoff game, I think 2 at the most, and I think there could be a potential upset with Mountainside, if you want to call that an upset, this week.
Yeah, and you look at it, and again, Sheldon at number 9. Beaverton has a higher floor than Sheldon, because I don't think they lose in the first round, but Beaverton's got a higher ceiling. I could see Beaverton being a little bit more up and down in the sense that they could lose in the first round, but I could also see them potentially making a quarterfinal run, whereas Sheldon, I think their ceiling's kind of the second round. Sherwood, I like the Sherwood football team, man. They've got a system. They're deep. They're talented. They have a good group. They don't have the superstars really to compete with the top schools in the state. But with the system, with the way they're coached, and with the depth of solid talent, again, not elite talent, but solid talent, they're really quality. And again, the weakness, obviously, being lack of superstar, the strength being that there really isn't a spot where they're bad. They're fairly solid up front. They never really throw the football much. They're always pretty one-dimensional. That's kind of a weakness. But as a strength, well-coached system and deep with pretty quality talent for this Sherwood team this year.
Yeah, I mean, most people can't tell you 2 or 3 guys on that roster, and I understand why, but I'm a huge fan and advocate of Sherwood and the program in general. They do it the right way. And a lot of credit to, you know, Wes Lynn, for example, just pasting a lot of them and other people. Sherwood, Nick Severson, the linebacking crew in general has been phenomenal. Brian Cusperson's only a junior, a kid that a lot of people don't know about. Logan Carr, the senior, the state's leading tackler the year previously. A really, really good group. And I think they're another team that 2 wins max in the playoffs. I mean, they could sneak. Well, 2 wins max, depending on their bracket, where they're at, who they got in the quarterfinals. But I really do like and appreciate that Sherwood program. Greg Lawrence does it as well as anybody, and they'll be good year in and year out. Could they get bounced in the first round? Most likely not. I see this as another 2-win, most likely quarterfinal-type team moving forward.
If I told you that Sherwood got a matchup against I know they just played them, but they got Central Catholic. They played them close in the quarterfinals, and they found a way to win. Would that floor you? I mean, would
Not
you just
bit.
Say, oh, my God, Not how did that happen? So, for me, Sherwood's the first team that has a semifinal ceiling. I don't think they can win the state title, but I do think they have a semifinal ceiling. I think if they played Jesuit, for example, and it just turned into a slugfest in the quarterfinals, I could see a scenario where they make the semifinals. I like this Sherwood team. They're really good. Their floor is probably a loss in the second round. I don't think that's likely. I think this is like a solid quarterfinal team. Of all the teams that have, you know, in this, I don't know, 5 to even 15 range, I think they're the most solid, where their ceiling's not super high, their floor's not super low. I think they make the quarterfinals and probably lose in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I think from an assessment standpoint, that was perfect on your part, and I wish I would have. I wish I would have elaborated better on that, because I 100% agree with you. You get, depending on the matchup in the quarterfinals, I can see Sherwood potentially winning that game. So, if we're talking ceiling, they have the potential to make it to the semifinals. Most likely, quarterfinals. I highly doubt them losing in a second round game, but. If we're talking ceiling, what's the highest they could go? I would 100% agree with you. You know, depending on the matchup, Central Catholic or somebody like that. I mean, it'll be Jesuit, and Jesuit looked unbelievable last week. So it can happen, and Sherwood's definitely a team that could beat a 1-2-3.
Okay, we said it earlier in the podcast, starting with number 6. These are all teams that have a shot to win the state title. Go back to last year at week 3, I think it was week 3, we gave 4 teams that could win the state title. As the teams that had a shot, there were 4, we said. Those were the 4 semifinal teams. And we said any of those 4 could win it. It wouldn't shock me. Any of those 4 could win it. And those 4 were the semifinalists. This year it won't happen. They won't be the 4 semifinalists because there are 6 of them. But I'd be a little surprised outside of Sherwood if 4 of these 6 teams aren't our semifinalists. At number 6 on your list, it's Central Catholic. We've talked about this for years. The strength of this team, one, they're senior laden. They've got over 30 seniors, and it's their perimeter. It's quarterback Cade Knight and a 4-year starter. Silas Starr's been playing varsity since he's a freshman. He's going to Stanford, the number one receiver in the state of Oregon. Calvin Souter's one of the top 5 receivers in the state of Oregon. They've got Miles Jackson, who's a great 2-way player who's kind of emerged as a star in his own right. They've got Elijah Elliott, one of the top 4 or 5 running backs in the state of Oregon. Everyone knows that group. It's the reason that when those guys were freshmen inside the program and around the state, people were saying, man, Central Catholic's going to win 2 or 3 titles with this group. The reason, at least internally, they feel like they haven't made this run or even made the semifinals with this group as the nucleus is the line play. And we saw it last week. Jesuit absolutely obliterated, dominated, and embarrassed Central Catholic up front. Jesuit had 4 touchdown runs of 52, 54, 54, and 59 yards. On all 4 of those, the running back went completely untouched. That can't happen. Now, I know it's a weakness for the program. It's a little down. It's not so down that they should get beat the way they do. They have a couple kids who have scholarship offers up front. So some of it in this weakness is coaching. And we've said this for multiple years now. Kids internally within the program have left the program and said, man, excuse me, there is a lot of wasted time in practice. Sometimes they'll have the offense on the field for an hour and the defense just stands there for an hour and watches. And then they flip and the defense is on the field for an hour and the offense stands there and watches. Never heard of that in my life, in all of the time I've been around football, that you would just have kids stand and watch. They have a new offense. I like their offense better. It still feels like they don't always have an identity. It still feels like they don't have a go-to, which is odd because they have a 4-year starter at quarterback and they have multiple pieces that have been playing since their sophomore year. You'd think they'd know the positions to get those guys in. I'd also like to see them move Silas around pre-snap a lot more than they do. Because what I saw in that Jesuit game is they stuck him to one side and they Jesuit shaded an outside linebacker over him. They locked down a corner and then they had a safety over the top and Silas couldn't do a whole lot. If you move him around, you put him in the slot, you mix him up, you give him the ball on a fly sweep, you pitch him the ball, you throw him bubble screens, you throw him slants, you throw him outs, you get him involved more. He's way too often put to the sideline when there's no question he's one of the best playmakers in the state. I love this team's talent. Their ceiling is a state title. Their floor is a second round loss because we've already seen them do it two years in a row where they lost when they shouldn't have. And again, I just am wondering how, when you have this many pieces that have been in your program this long, you don't have an offensive identity and you could be that bad and look that ill prepared against Jesuit, who was without Andy Alfieri. Just a stunning, stunning result from what I saw in person last week. I know you were there as well. Last week result, and also obviously strengths, weaknesses, ceiling, and floor for this Central Catholic team.
I mean, I guess ceiling wise, I'll say state championship, but I'm so reluctant to do that, being that I have seen very few times an offensive line dominate another team. I was there just like you doing the broadcast for the other prep game of the week, and that was an absolute, like, look, we're gonna open this hole right here and we'll tell you where we're going and we're gonna do it every single time for four quarters.
Jesuit did not throw or attempt a pass in the second half. They just ran the ball and ran away from Central Catholic. I just wanted to get that stat in so people understand. They made it clear they were never going to throw the ball again in the game, and still were knocking off 15, 20, 50-yard runs regularly. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, so, like, imagine if Andy Alfieri is back with Logan Horton playing tight end, or, mixing in as a blocker or something along those lines. As everybody knows, Andy Alfieri was not playing, and credit to the Jesuit kids. I mean, just the Clan Quillen, Charlie Picard, two juniors, by the way, 6'3", 280, 6'5", 255, who will be playing and returning next year, Division One kids. Cade Wisher goes 27 carries, 317 yards. Ted Atkinson goes 17 carries, 146 yards. And it was so impressive. Logan Horton just setting up shop on whoever got in his way and just destroying people. And these are good high school football players for Central Catholic. It's not like they can't play. They have a bunch of first and second team all-league returners, and they just got destroyed. So I love the perimeter. They got dudes everywhere. We've talked about this countless times. Cade Knighton, I thought he played really well. 21 for 32 for 406 yards and, three or four touchdowns, whatever it was. I thought he played well. But, I mean, Jesuit said, look, here's what we're going to do to you. We're going to tell you where we're going to run. They ran there. It was so impressive. And I have a hard time. If they play Jesuit again, they're not going to win just because they're going to – Jesuit will do the exact same thing. And they showed there's nothing else. I mean, unless they get some late transfer or something, they're not going to have anybody to stop that, because – barring injuries, they're going to have the same dude, so I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah, Central Catholic had 10 men in the box most of the second half, and Jesuit, and you rattled off those stats, Jesuit was still averaging over 10 yards a carry. It was unbelievable. And again, this Central Catholic team, and I get tired of this because I love the kids. I love the kids. It's not, people think I don't like the program. I do. It's just so unbelievable to watch with the talent they have, the way that at times they get embarrassed. They played Clackamas a couple years ago, and talent-wise, I would say Central Catholic was probably better, and Clackamas beat them by like 6 touchdowns. Do you remember that game? I think we were at that game. It's just sometimes they have games like that where you go, what is going on? I know there are other programs that have those, never with as much talent as Central Catholic does. At number 5, the Jesuit Crusaders, hey, we just saw the blueprint of their strengths. They can run the ball. They're unbelievable up front. And we've got some teams on this list. Beaverton, North Medford, okay. Sherwood's pretty good up front. Clackamas is not very good up front. We've got some teams on this list that aren't very good up front. Jesuit's going to be able to run all over a lot of teams in the playoffs because they're unbelievable up front, and they've got a stable of really good running backs, particularly if Andy Alfieri comes back. But Ted Atkinson, Cade Wisher, two of the better running backs in the state, two of the more underrated running backs in the state. So they could potentially have three really good running backs, one of the state's best offensive lines. They don't even need to throw the football. Now, that's a weakness, and when they play the very best teams in the state, like a West Lynn or a Tualatin or a Tigard, they're going to have to be more balanced. And I don't know if they can be. That's why I don't think they're a shoo-in. That's why they're number 5 and not number 1 or number 2. And I don't love the perimeter. I know they're great up front. They've got great running backs. They don't have a proven receiver, really. They don't have a proven secondary. You can throw all over them, as Cade Knighton showed. Even when he didn't have time, he was able to throw for a whole lot of yards. This Jesuit team can beat anybody because they can point to a spot on the O-line and say, we're running here, and you can't stop us, and they're right. But they can also lose to almost anybody, as we saw against Aloha the week before they beat Central Catholic, because Aloha just said, we're going to throw all over you and there's nothing you can do about it. Their ceiling's a state title. Their floor might be a second round exit. I know that sounds crazy, but after losing to Aloha, that seems fair. I think the most likely scenario is they make the semifinals or quarterfinals, but they could lose in the second round. What say you on Jesuit?
Yeah, no, I agree. With losing to Aloha, I think that put a lot of things in perspective. And I think the next few weeks, Mountainside playing Beaverton, Aloha playing Mountainside, there's going to be some very telling things. But, I mean, Jesuit, I agree with you, could win the state title. That being said, you've got a Westland, a Lake Oswego, a Tualatin, who will spend a week saying, okay, if they can beat us with the pass, so be it. But we're gonna do everything all week long to prepare for this run, and they will be more than ready. And that's a huge issue, because you got to be able to, especially if you got to drive the field in sparing time or something like that. You got to be able to do that. And Jesuit has not proven that. Back in the previous years, they've had some of the top receivers in the state, even though they didn't throw that much. And I mean, they don't have bad dudes by any means, but their running game is overwhelmingly the focus, and I have a hard time seeing helping them win a state title. Do they get there? Potentially, but I just foresee them. I agree with your assessment. A second round loss is most likely not going to happen, but they just lost to Aloha, so it's possible. That being said, if they can figure out some type of passing game, they could win the state title.
And they've got a Metro League slate here to try to figure it out. It's not that they won't have time. They'll get the reps. They don't have to run 50 times a game to win games like they did against Central Catholic. They'll be up big and can still throw it. And with Jesuit, it's more running up the score if they run the ball than if they throw it. West Lynn at number four, they lost to Central Catholic, so in week one. We have to give them that. Week ones are weird, especially with this West Lynn team. They were not young, because some of those guys are seniors, but they were inexperienced at a couple of key spots, including quarterback with Ethan Coleman, heading into that week one. I actually think West Lynn is my favorite. If I had to pick a team right now, gun to my head, this team wins the state title or you're dead, I would pick West Lynn at number four. The ceiling, the strength of their team, they're good everywhere. Their O-line is the best in the state. Their D-line is very, very good. They've got really athletic linebackers led by Cole Peters. Their secondary is incredibly good, led by Casey Tawa, who's potentially a first-team all-state corner. On the offensive end, Ethan Coleman's been great. Again, they have the state's best O-line. They have a great perimeter. They have multiple receivers who are elite receivers. They've got good running backs and led by Gavin Haynes, but also Cole Peters comes in and spells him and is also a good running back. This team has no weakness. They really don't. They're maybe the most well-coached team in the state. They have a first-year starter with Ethan Coleman, and I could see a team getting to him and rattling him, potentially. They also don't have a superstar running back. Gavin Haynes is very good. He's one of the top 10 running backs in the state, but he's not an absolute superstar. So I could see a scenario where Ethan Coleman gets rattled, they try to run the football, and Gavin Haynes can't take over a game by himself. That said, the O-line's so good, it's really hard to rattle Ethan Coleman, and Gavin Haynes is going to have holes to run through. The floor for this team is at least the quarterfinals. It's almost tempting for me to say they can't lose until the semis, no matter who they play. That's how good they are. They're emerging. I know they're number four. For me, they're emerging, because that's what their resume shows right now. They're emerging as the best team in the state. I'm trying to think of a weakness, man. Feel free to chime in. Strengths, weaknesses, ceiling, floor. For me, ceiling, state title. I think they have the best shot at the state title. Their floor, to me, is maybe the quarters, but probably the semis. And again, I've got them number one in my power rankings, even though the resume should have them at number four right now.
Yeah, we spend too much time together because I would have them. I have them ranked number four, obviously, but they would be my favorite to win the state title as of right now. I think they're that good. That week one loss to Central Catholic, I think, is indicative of it being week one and them having a lot of juniors. Outstanding senior group, a really, really good junior group that's won from a very young age all the way through. So you take a Casey Tawa. Once again, we've talked about this, four touchdowns last week. The last time he dropped the ball was like seventh grade. And he's that dude where you can rely on him to always make those catches. Ethan Coleman, 22 touchdowns and two picks so far this year. Very impressive. Couldn't agree with you more. He's a guy that could get rattled. I 100% could see him getting rattled if a defense does what they are going to need to do in the semis or state title. My ceiling for them as reference would be, most likely to win the state title as of right now. I would have a hard time not seeing them in the semis. At least, I think they're that good. They're Chris Miller does it as well as anybody. It's going to be sad to see him go. I'm wishing him the best, but just what a great dude, what a great coach, and they're really, really good, man. I think everyone will be out at Lake Oswego West Lynn this week, and it's just impressive. I think the ceiling state title, the floor semis for the Lions.
The Lake Oswego Lakers, the defending state champs at number three. And again, one thing with West Lynn before we go on to Lake Oswego is they're also healthy right now. And part of the reason it's like, man, they don't have a lot of weaknesses. Some of these teams are really banged up. And West Lynn right now is maybe the healthiest team in the state, certainly one of. Number three, the Lake Oswego Lakers. Strength of this team is Casey Philkins. They're pretty good up front. There's got a solid O-line. They're a physical team. They're deep. They've got a lot of really good athletes. But I, you know, Thomas Dukart's hurt and he may, you know, we'll have to see when he's fully back. I don't know if he'll fully be back where he's 100% all the way through the season at receiver. He can be most of the way back at DB within a couple weeks. I'm not sure if he's going to play here the next couple weeks. So that's something to monitor. Casey Philkins has reached another gear. He's the best player in the state. It's unquestionable, particularly given that Andy Alfieri's out. He's almost unstoppable. The problem is, I think, against this Lake Oswego team, and it's the weakness, you can load the box and dare them to throw, and the passing game right now hasn't come together the way they'd want it to. J.J. Wooden is playing better as of late. He played really poorly early in the year. They could not throw the football earlier in the year. They're getting better, but we said the same thing about Wes Lynn. I think you can rattle J.J. I think you could load the box and potentially create a situation that forces them to throw and be in a ball game where, you know, JJ makes a couple mistakes and you're in the game. That being said, this Lake Oswego team is number three for a reason. They're the defending champs for a reason. Their ceiling is a state title because they might be able to just ride Casey Philkins and be more balanced than a Jesuit, be more balanced than a Sherwood, certainly throwing the football, and win a state title. The floor is probably the quarters or maybe the semis. I just can't imagine Lake Oswego possibly losing in the second round. I don't care who they play. And you could talk me into really easily saying their floor is the semis, that there is no one they could play in the quarters and lose. That's where I see Lake Oswego right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think of LO with Tommy Tekart if we're referencing the playoffs and so on. I think he's got a couple weeks left, and he'll be back, so he'll miss this week, miss Canby. And then he'll be back the week after that. I think he's the only kid, first team All-State both ways, that's returning in Oregon this year. He's that valuable on both sides of the football. So I think of Lake Oswego differently with and without him. That being said, until someone proves otherwise with a full lineup, I really like Lake Oswego to make a deep run. I mean, the state championship being the ceiling. I do agree with you, though. I mean, I don't know if Casey Philkins would allow a quarterfinal loss. He's that good, that dominant. But he is credit to Tiger, because I saw him for the first time in my life bottled up 34 yards against Tiger a few weeks ago. And there's the blueprint for anybody else that wants to stop Lake Oswego moving forward. I mean, that's the dude, right? So we'll see this week. I mean, they have Tualatin, they have Westland this week, and then Lake Oswego has Tualatin, and that brutal TRL lineup
I mean, it's survival of the fittest. Who can get to the playoffs and be relatively healthy to make a run? And if you lose a guy or two, if you lose Thomas Dekard and another guy, like Malcolm Williams went down, he's back last week. But, you know, if you lose a couple guys, it's really, really hard to compete in a conference like the TRL and then deep in the playoffs as well. So for me, state championship being the ceiling for Lake O, quarterfinals being the floor.
Our top fours are all TRL, aren't they?
Yeah.
Tualatin, Tigard, Lake O, Westland.
Think about that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Number two, the Tigard Tigers. And this is your list. You could almost make Tigard co-number ones with Tualatin. They beat Lake Oswego. Tualatin was in the number two spot. Tigard was at five or six. Tigard just kind of flies under the radar, man. They're as good a program over the past 10 years as anybody in the state for the most part. I don't think anybody, you know, has certainly outdistanced them by much, if at all. Max Lindsay is the best corner in the state. Drew Carter is emerging as the best junior quarterback in the state. They're really good up front. They held Casey Filkins to under 40 yards rushing, which is unbelievable. They can load the box and then put Max Lindsay in one-on-one coverage, and he can still shut you down and make it really hard to move the football. And they did it against Lake Oswego. I think their weakness is probably, and they're another program that's kind of tough to come up with one. They do have a new head coach. I do think sometimes Tigard gets too involved in the brand of Tigard football, and they don't always get the ball in the hands of their playmakers as well as they could. If it's a running back, they'll run him into the ground. If it's a receiver, sometimes they have a hard time being balanced and staying balanced, and that concerns me. The other thing, they haven't made a deep run in a while, a state title run in a while. So you've got some inexperience once you get into the semifinals and the finals in terms of guys having been there before. But as you can hear, I'm stretching to come up with weaknesses for this Tigard team. I love this Tigard team. Very talented. I like a number of kids on the team. They're great up front. They've got a great quarterback. They've got one of the best two-way playmakers in the state in Max Lindsay. The ceiling's a state title. But this Tigard team sometimes gets too one-dimensional and struggles and makes mistakes. They are not on upset watch by any stretch of the imagination. That's not where I'm going. But whereas some of these other teams, we go, man, there's no way they could lose before the semifinals. Tigard's a team I could see losing in the quarters if they faced a Central Catholic, or in the semis, you know, the second round or the quarterfinals. I see them as being a state title ceiling, and a floor being a quarterfinal loss. But more than likely, this is a semifinal team.
I mean, yeah, they've been dominant all year long. Lake Oswego is really the only test they've had thus far. And, I mean, they were dominant. So, I mean, as of right now, I agree with you. They could easily, you know, be co-1. They'll finish the year against Tualatin. So that will be an insane matchup. Max Lindsay returned his second kickoff in a row, two games in a row last week. Hunter Gilbert, the running back, one of the fastest players in all of the Northwest. Like, if he gets a corner on you, it's over. And most people don't even know who he is. Hunter Gilbert is the real deal.
Might be the most underrated player in the state.
I would probably agree with you. He's legit, man. He's a track star. He flies. And, you know, kids like Josh Burns, and then their lineman, Johnny Namani. Braden Zolkowski is playing well. They have dudes coming out of the woodworks. And once again, another program from the youth on up that is just, I mean, they do it the right way. Tigard, Tualatin, Sherwood, you go watch those little guys from a very young age, and they stay the course, and they do a really good job. But I agree with you. I've seen Tigard show up over the last, you know, handful of years and be like, wow, who was that? Like, they sometimes, and I doubt it, because they just got dudes everywhere. Where you don't see the typical Tigard team. So Drew Carter against Lake Oswego was 6 for 16 passing the ball, but he did some, you know, incredible things with his feet, and he's a phenomenal athlete. So if they're firing in all cylinders and the passing game is intact, then they're going to be a very, very tough team to beat. That defensive execution against Lake Oswego, what they did to Casey, you know, holding him to 34 yards, was unbelievable. It was kind of like what Jesuit did offensively last week. The execution was incredible. So the coaching's there, the athletes are there. It'll come down to, you know, whether they they show up and you know, the ceiling obviously is a state title. I don't see them in any way being outside of the quarterfinals.
Number one, congrats, you're there for the first time in a long, long time, Tualatin. Tualatin's bugaboo every year is Tigard, right? I mean, isn't that the thing we always talk about, that for some reason Tualatin can't quite get over the hump with Tigard?
Wes Lynn has a real tough time with Tigard, and Tualatin has a real tough time with Tigard
so
every year.
I could see a scenario where Tualatin goes all the way through the year and is really good and wins a lot of games, and they get to that last game of the year and they're so hyped for that game because they really haven't been in this spot ever where they're the school everyone's watching. They get in that regular season game, which is going to be a monster, and lose going into the playoffs. And I wonder if that jars them. The strengths of their team, man, they're good everywhere. Kainoa Sayre is really good. John Miller is one of the best linebackers in the state. He might be the best linebacker in the state. He was a first-team all-league selection when he was just a sophomore. He's a senior now. Luke Marion's one of the breakout players in the state of Oregon. They're really good a lot of places. They're pretty good up front. They're not elite up front, but they're pretty good up front. They've got a lot of skill position guys. They're very similar to Wes Lynn. They're not quite as overpowered up front as Wes Lynn, but they might be better at the skill positions. So kind of a blend of Central Catholic and Wes Lynn there. The one area I'd say they're not particularly elite is quarterback. I think they have a really good athlete at the quarterback position, but I don't necessarily think they have a guy that can pick you apart. You could potentially load the box, dare them to throw, and run into some trouble. They don't have elite receivers. John Miller's a great tight end. Kainoa Sayre's a great running back. Ceiling, state title. They're the number one team in the state for a reason. Floor, I saw them lose in the second round last year where they were up late on Central Catholic big. We thought it was over at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and they sat on the ball and kind of panicked and fell apart. And the coaching staff had a real hard time with me saying that. One of the coaches was really upset. One of the assistants was really upset that I said that, that they sat on the ball and the coaches kind of tightened up because they, oh my gosh, we might beat Central Catholic. And they kind of cost their team the game. And they, like, that's not reality. That's what the players thought. I heard that from the players. And they did a nice job in the offseason of rebranding, rebuilding their trust, and everybody's all good. They're all on the same page. They're the number one team in the state. But we've already seen it. If they're in this spot where they're in the quarterfinals up 7 with 5 minutes to go, can they get a first down, or do they kind of just, let's just kind of fullback dive here and punt and hope we can hang on? I could see them losing in the quarterfinals because they just haven't been here before. But I think the most likely scenario is the state semifinals or a state finals for them.
Yeah, I think they learned from that experience last season, which was so valuable. You know, it's funny how those things work, where you can really, you kind of a blessing in disguise. So, I mean, Tualatin, once again, another program that just does it right. Coach Lever, a lot of credit to Coach Lever coming in, because Tualatin was a dumpster fire for a couple of years. And this is a school that is never like that. I mean, what was it, like 09, 10, 11, something, when they won the state title. They've been good for a number of years. They've had guys like Luke Staley. I mean, a very, very impressive program, top to bottom. We all know about the perimeter, the Luke Marions, the John Millers, Kainoa, all of that. Cade McCarty had 150 yards receiving and a couple touchdowns, a wide receiver last week who is also a first-team All-League returner at outside linebacker. A bunch of kids that people don't necessarily know about. The line is overachieving right now. They don't have any elite guys up there. They're just very, very fundamentally sound, and they do a good job. It's one of those ones where they're going to have to get over the hump, meaning – look, we haven't won a title in a decade or what have you, but we can. And they're going to have to believe. They're going to have to say, look, we are better than Tigard. We know we are. We're going to go prove it. Because until they show up and do that, people are going to say Tigard has the advantage, regardless of me putting them at 1, Tigard at 2, who cares? I mean, you got to go to Tigard and beat them and say, we are, you know, the best in this area, the best in the TRL. So it's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks. The ceiling being a state title, I could see them losing in the quarterfinals. I mean, doubt it, but it's possible. So another team I really, really like. I'm a big fan of that Tualatin program. But you got to each and every week, man. As we saw with Central Catholic getting pasted by Jesuit. You just never know.
We went way over on the amount of time. Swag is in the booth, very concerned about the clock. So I want to go over this week's action, and then I want to go over a program situation I'm not real happy about. Feel free to chime in on that if you'd like. Thursday, interesting games. And I'm just going to be quick, JJ, I think, because we are up against it. Thursday, Grant at Jefferson. I think that's probably for the PIL title. The team that wins it is probably going to win the league championship. I think a lot of people thought Jefferson after the first few weeks was a shoe-in. I actually think this Grant program could put up a fight. Good call by you to say this Grant program's a little better than people anticipated this year. You called that early. That's going to be an interesting one to watch. These are Thursday night games because, again, the week is split. McNary at Sprague, just with the season that McNary's had to start, you've got to turn your season around. I believe they're 0-4, correct?
5.
0-5. So the same spot they were in last year with a senior-laden group, a senior quarterback, a multi-year starter, multiple linebackers that are, you know, really talented, really quality. They have on paper a really talented team. There's no excuse for the start they've been at. When we talk about the biggest underachievers this year, even if they end up going 4-5 like they did last year. Last year they started 0-5, went 4-5, won the GVC. If they go 4-5 again, I don't care. It's still a massive, massive disappointment from this McNary squad. They've got Sprague. Time to turn it around now. If you lose to Sprague, and you've already said this, it's time to pack it up and go home. I think you said that about Barlow. Like, if you can't beat Barlow with the senior group you've got, time to just call it a day and do something else. That's this week for me. They need to win this game. We've got Scappoose at Wilsonville as the Power Rents game of the week. Swag and I will be on the call starting at 6:45 on 10 the Fan. On Friday night, Mountainside against Beaverton. Listen, if Mountainside's for real and maybe a real top 10 team, they need to beat Beaverton because Beaverton's in the lower half of the top 10. That's actually a sneaky, really good matchup. That might be the second best game in the state this week. Lake Oswego at West Lynn obviously is a huge one. Look for West Lynn, in my opinion, to win that game. I like Lake Oswego, but without Thomas Ducart, Malcolm Williams is just now getting back. They're still figuring some things out. It's at West Lynn, and West Lynn looks real, real good right now. I could potentially see a big win for West Lynn. If Lake Oswego wins that game, we're still talking about Lake Oswego maybe being the number one team in the state, even though they had a hiccup, or at least having that ceiling, we should say. And then Sheldon at Jesuit. Jesuit should run all over Sheldon. Sheldon's not very good this year. Again, it's the worst Sheldon team we've seen in a decade plus. Jesuit just beat Central Catholic. It's a noteworthy game because normally it would be the absolute headliner, Sheldon Jesuit. This year's billing will not live up to the hype. JJ, anything very quickly you want to touch on with those games?
I mean, I think you said that pretty well. Jefferson, Grant, you know, it'll be interesting from a seating standpoint because, you know, it's not, you just don't, if you're Jeff and you go 8-1, you just don't necessarily have any quality wins, assuming you win this against Grant, because Grant has been overachieving. You lost to North Medford by 32. So it'll be interesting to see from a seeding standpoint there. That's why this Jeff Grant game to me is so intriguing. I got Jeff by a touchdown or so on Thursday. And then with regards to Westland Lake, typically you're not thinking, okay, well, I wonder how the state champ is going to show up or what they're going to look like. But I think this is a really intriguing matchup, being West Lynn is playing as well as they are, and they're at home, and you're playing the state champions. A lot of those kids know each other very, very well. So I think that's going to be a game with a lot of intensity, no love lost. Anybody that gets a chance should get there.
Just the funny, we did this last year. We made a big deal out of it last year. We won't make a big deal out of it this year, but the funny OSAA rankings, and again, they do look better at the end of the year, but just don't put them out. Right now, Sheldon at 2-3 is number 6. Tualatin, our number one team, is number 11. Again, Sheldon, 2-3 on the year, is number 6 in the state. Tualatin at 5-0 is number 11. Again, just don't put the rankings out until like week 8 because it's just so, so ugly. I wanted to touch on this, and it bothers me. It's the biggest concern I have in the state right now. It's the Clackamas Cavaliers and the state of the program. There were some issues internally last year, and there were some coaches who moved on, not Coach Bushman. I want to be very clear. He moved on to a better role at the college level. There were some assistants who I thought were very immature and handled some situations rather poorly. They were not asked back, which I think is great. In the new year, I went and covered and was the color commentary guy for the game against Tumwater. And I was stunned at the lack of discipline and the lack of sportsmanship I saw from the Clackamas Cavaliers. Multiple personal foul penalties, a personal foul penalty on the sideline on a player. After that personal foul penalty, there was a flag thrown and a player near the official took his helmet off and threw it on the sideline. It wasn't good. Clackamas scored a touchdown late. They were still down 2 scores. They have a touchdown chain, which I don't really have a problem with. Like, modern football, guys have touchdown chain. But they celebrated with the touchdown chain like they just took a lead in a state playoff game with like 30 seconds left. They went absolutely bonkers with the touchdown chain, running over to the student section and celebrating. They were still down 2 scores in the four. It was either late third quarter or early fourth quarter. It just looked bad. Again, multiple personal fouls, really undisciplined, just kind of embarrassing, frankly. So I asked somebody associated with the program, because this stuff happens sometimes. You get in a game and you lose a game, you feel like maybe you shouldn't, or you lose, you know, your season isn't quite going the way you want it to, and you have a bad week, or an official's particularly bad and you're frustrated. And the person connected to the school said, it's been like this, it's been bad like this every week this season. That's a concern. So that worries me. Then the following week, and I'm still maybe not going to say anything. It happens, whatever. It's bad. Honestly, if it were a PIL school that had a touchdown chain and there were multiple personal fouls and players, a player throwing his helmet, people would go nuts and it would get written about. But it's Clackamas, so it kind of goes under the radar. Against Lake Oswego, Clackamas before the game danced on Lake Oswego's logo, confirmed by multiple people. There's no way it didn't happen. I wasn't there, but enough people talked about it. Multiple players on the Lake Oswego team retweeted a tweet about it, and it bothered Lake Oswego. They were up 42-0 in the third quarter. There's a new head coach. It's a new situation, and yet I have real concerns. They're underperforming on the field. They're underachieving on the field, and not only that, but they are a mess character-wise. I've been embarrassed. I'm a Clackamas alum. I'm a little bit ashamed of what I'm seeing. It's not just that they're not playing well, and they're not. It's also that they're horribly undisciplined. They are the state's most undisciplined team right now that's competitive. There are teams that are not competitive that have more problems. But of the realistic, real programs, they're the worst in the state right now for behavior, for attitude. I would bury that touchdown chain and say, until we start playing with some sportsmanship and some dignity, this thing goes away. This is a tool for programs to have fun. But if we're already having way too much fun and getting flagged for all the fun, we don't need to emphasize the fun with a touchdown chain. I'm disappointed, I'm embarrassed, and I'm already looking at that hire and saying, maybe Clackamas made a mistake. Because he inherited a great program, a program that was something like 24-1 or something like that in the few 26-1 in the 2 years before Bushman left. And yes, they lost some talent. But there's no excuse for the performance on the field, and there's even less of an excuse for the behavior on and off of it. So far, I'm really underwhelmed by the job Clackamas is doing as a program, and if I were the AD, I would be on the sideline, and I would get it fixed. Because the other question I asked an official with Clackamas is, are they having this? Is this a community problem? Are they having this problem with other programs in the school? Is it a baseball issue? Is it a basketball issue? Is it a volleyball issue, a softball issue? And the answer I got back was no. The issue lies exclusively with football. Jordan, I'm concerned.
I mean, yeah, because that's a common sense issue with regards to the chain. Like, if you're getting trounced and you're running around, I mean, you're the 2 years removed from being a state champ, 26-1, some of the most respected players ever to come out of the state. Joe Bushman had this thing dialed, man. I mean, Jake, his son, Justice Pagan, Kelson Hennessy, a bunch of D1 kids running around, incredibly fundamentally sound. You there are certain things that don't need to, shouldn't have to be said. It's like, what? Like, what'd you do? You're down three scores and you're running around with the chain and the crowd and this and that. That's just like, that's embarrassing, man. I mean, that's embarrassing on all fronts. I mean, you can go hindsight on the higher. It's easy to do, but you take what Don Johnson has done at Jeff is amazing. And when you watch how good they are in the next couple of years, because they're primarily all underclassmen. If he has a Clackamas just as a hypothetical, you think that would last? You think that would ever happen? No way, never. They would be running till forever. They probably, I mean, who knows what
they'd still be running. They'd still be running.
They'd be missing classes to run. It would be over. So my point is I really question some of these hires. A program like Clackamas, Sprague, for example, which is now a dumpster fire and has been really good for a number of years. I mean, they couldn't have gone in the, I mean, between McNary, Sprague and McNary play each other this week, and I don't know who's going to, maybe neither one win. I don't know.
You better be careful with Sprague, because they have blocked me now on social media. I am blocked from Sprague football. I have no idea why. I'm not critical of the program. You've been more critical than I have. They've blocked me on social media now.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway,
just goes to show where they're at, right?
If they're not upset with what's going on after as good as they've been over the years, Sprague's been an elite team in Oregon, and they're awful. And so, I mean, that's just – let's just be – there's no point – if we're not being honest here, then what are we doing? So,
right.
I agree. Clackamas has a ton of talented kids still. If they didn't have talented kids, it'd be a different issue. Character is obviously the most important thing, but they have talented kids. Austin Atkinson is one of the best players in the state of Oregon. Great kid, and so there's a bunch of talent there, and I really hope that they somehow, some way, kind of recoup the second half of the regular season and figure it out.
Well, I would have them run like you wouldn't believe all week. I would literally take the touchdown chain and say, we don't do this until we've won three games in a row and we have no personal foul penalties, not for a late hit, but for running our mouths or doing anything on the sideline. This goes away. We need to win games and shut our mouths. And I would also give the very famous speech that Mike Leach gave to Texas Tech. If you haven't seen it, I recommend YouTubing it. Texas Tech was coming off a year, maybe it was 2 years ago, but I think it was coming off a year where they went like 10-2. It was their best season ever. And the team started out flat and they had some ego issues. And he gives a speech about, did you guys score those touchdowns? Did you win those games? Do you get to have the swagger that team had? You guys haven't done anything. You guys haven't done anything. Michael Crabtree scored those touchdowns. Wes Welker scored those touchdowns. You didn't score those touchdowns. And he listed star players from the history of the program. I can't name them all. You know, Cliff Kingsbury threw those touchdown passes. You didn't throw those touchdown passes. You didn't make those tackles. You didn't beat Texas. You didn't beat Oklahoma. You guys haven't done anything. And I think Clackamas right now needs that speech, because whether it's the players on the sideline or the coaching staff, someone needs to be reminded that Jake Bushman won a state championship. Cole Turner won a state championship. Mitchell Majeski won a state championship. And these kids, honestly, if you're walking around getting multiple personal fouls and then somebody within your program says this happens every week, and then after you lose to 2A Tumwater from Washington, the next week before the game, you're dancing on Lake Oswego's mascot or logo, you're doing something wrong. Get it fixed. It's embarrassing. And I'm saying this as somebody who went to Clackamas. I'm embarrassed as someone who went to Clackamas, because it has turned from a really good, really disciplined, really well-coached, really button-up program to a bit of a dumpster fire in just a matter of months. It needs to get fixed, and I want to end the show there. Jordan, thank you very much for joining me. I know it was a long one. I know you're probably like pacing a hallway somewhere. We'll be back next week for the normal recap preview style of the show. Jordan, thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, buddy. Take care.
Thank you, as always, for listening. No Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick this Thursday, because Swag and I, as I mentioned before, are at the Power Rinse Game of the Week. It is Scappoose at Wilsonville starting at 6:45 p.m. on 1080 The Fan. We'll have a pregame show, obviously the game, and we will recap with scores around the state. That'll be Thursday because we have a split week this week, Thursday, Friday games. We'll give you all the Thursday scores, and I'll also give you a breakdown of who's visiting Oregon and Oregon State, some big-time visitors for both programs. Thank you, as always, for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.